Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, host of the program, but also, more importantly, a father of five, raising my children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado with a conception of human life that respects life as a gift from God. Life, human life, when does life begin? Obviously at conception. I don't think there's much disagreement on that. The problem is, a lot of people don't think that this child's a person or viable or has a right to a life. If they do have life, they say they don't have the right to the life. But with me right now is Maria Lancaster, and she has a great story to tell about a little child she adopted. Was it 6 years ago? 6 years and 9 months ago, Maria?
That's right. That's right.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened? The adoption occurred 9 months before the child was born.
That's right. Well, to make a long story short, to bring people up to speed, my husband and I were unable to have children on our own, and we heard a radio interview by Dr. Dobson, who was interviewing a woman who had adopted somebody else's frozen embryos that were remaining from fertility treatments. And my husband came home and said, you know what, I think that's what we're supposed to do. And we were older, like over 40, and so, you know, our options were narrowing. And when my husband came home and told me about this, I thought, you know what, I think he's right. I think this is God's plan for us. And so we called the agency that that couple went through, which was called Nightlight Christian Adoptions, near Fullerton, California. And they were very helpful, and at the time there were 10 babies born in the United States. So this was definitely new, and they were the only ones in the United States that were doing it. So it was a journey that was definitely, you know, there was no culture of how to do this.
Yes.
So we walked through it, and we had a home study, just like we were adopting a born child, because after all, an embryo is a human being. And so we had a social worker come to our house. We did a picture and letter presentation to the donating family, which they then also sent a reciprocal packet from them about their family. And the embryos had been in the freezer for 4 years at two cells, and they were flown frozen, FedEx, from North Carolina to Washington State, where I'm from, thawed out in a dish to six cells, which is still microscopic, and then transferred to my womb, and she was born 9 months later.
Wow. So there were multiple children that were implanted?
We put two embryos in, and I was initially pregnant with twins, but at about 6 weeks, I lost one.
What is the typical survival rate?
Well, there really isn't a typical survival rate. I mean, I guess as a broad average, a lot goes into it. How long ago the embryos were frozen, because they've perfected the freezing techniques. So embryos frozen today have a much better survival rate than, say, embryos frozen 10 years ago. But generally speaking, you know, let's just say you have 10 embryos. Generally speaking, you should be able to expect, and this is very general, you know, at least 8 of them to make it.
Okay. All right. And this little girl grew in your womb over 9 months, and when she was born, she was over 4 years old.
Correct. Well, actually, by that point, over about 5 years old.
Right. And yet she was still the same size as a little nine-month-old newborn child.
Right.
Wow. What a story. How many of these embryos are out there?
In 2003, the RAND company did a survey that was quite exhaustive, and there were approximately 400,000 embryos in the freezer in 2003, and about 89% of those embryos were being reserved by the families that created them for their future family building. So the other 11% sort of fell into a undecided category. Some of those families were considering donating them for research. Some knew they weren't going to have any more children but were freezing them indefinitely. Some of them were considering discarding them. So that 11%, which is approximately 40,000, are the ones. And that was in 2003. This is 2009, and they're making more every day. So, I think we can safely assume that there's at least 50,000 embryos out there across the country that are just in limbo.
Maria, do most parents consider these little embryos to be children?
I think most parents that have children after they do IVF treatments, regardless of their religious background, because I talk to a lot of different people, different backgrounds, most of them know that, in fact, because they went through IVF and they have born children, that the embryos are capable of becoming born children at the very minimum.
Yes, right, right.
Regardless of religious background, it's just, how can you deny it?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. This is life. This is life, and this is growing life. Once placed into the warm, nurturing environment of the womb, that child is going to mature and grow and one day pop out of the womb and be one of our little ones.
Well, and the interesting thing, too, is that the embryo makes the placenta.
Right.
And the other interesting thing that I've learned is that any embryo can go into anyone's womb as long as they are capable of bearing a child. So it doesn't have to be like a blood type match or even a racial match.
So maybe sometime in the future, a child that may not survive in one particular womb might be able to be transferred to another.
That's possible. That's more like falls into the surrogacy category, which, I started an embryo adoption agency, and we don't do surrogacy, although some embryo adoption agencies do surrogacy, and that's what that really is.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between embryo donation and embryo adoptions?
That's a great question. Embryo adoption is a more comprehensive term to label this process because embryo adoption involves a home study. It involves possibly having an open adoption between the two families or even open between, where the agency can facilitate the relationship. In embryo donation, that usually refers to a process by which fertility clinics make available embryos that they have in the freezer that they created for other patients, and they make those embryos available to their patients who want to get pregnant. Somebody comes out of the freezer, so that's a good thing. I think it's better to have the embryo adoption component where the families have pictures and letters, they know who they are, at least on a first-name basis, and have more of a ability to correspond and possibly meet someday, because we all know that the kids eventually ask a lot of questions and want to know. So I think from a social point of view, embryo adoption is what we're shooting for, because that's the highest and best good for the born children.
What kind of a contact have you made with the natural conceived parents of this child?
Personally, we have what's called semi-open, where we contact each other through the agency that we went through.
Okay. Okay. So they maintain contact with both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good. And about who decides who gets to adopt the embryo? Do the parents review the applications and this sort of thing, or is it something the adoption agency more or less decides?
That's a great question. Actually, how we do it is we have the adopting families make their own profile. So whatever it is they would like to say to a donating family, through pictures and letters, and we submit that to the donating family. And I kind, personally, I do it by, you know, reviewing both families' files and saying there's so many similarities here. We try to match people up demographically, and other things that we have in the questionnaire that they answer. We do our best to make sure that this is going to be a go if we do introduce these families to each other. So I send the donating or the adopting family information to the donating family, and then if they sign off on it, then the donating family submits their information to the adopting family, so both families have an equal opportunity to review both sets of information so that everybody feels good about it.
Mm. You know, as I think about these sorts of things, and I think I was reviewing the law on this, I think I read somewhere that embryo adoption is not considered adoption by law, but exchange of property. And I thought to myself, boy, that's still not a very good way to treat these things, at least legally. Now, granted, the adoption agencies, I'm sure, are careful in how they handle these things. But if it's just merely an exchange of property, it sort of brings back the concepts of slavery and how people would buy and sell slaves centuries ago. Could that kind of thing happen today, do you think?
Well, the contract we signed was a transfer of property because, unfortunately, embryos are, in this country, with the exception of the state of Georgia, are referred to as property, and so they come under property law. Mm-hmm. I can't really do anything about that.
Sure, sure.
However, there is a trend, of course, to recognize embryos as human beings, as persons, and so we just have to keep doing what we're doing because I believe that every born child is a sign and wonder to the public that, hey, she was in the freezer for 4 years of two cells and now she's walking around.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of undeniable. So in the meantime, while our system is maybe making some adjustments, we're going forward and getting them out of the freezer any way that we can.
You don't want these little guys to pass away. You want to give them a life and protect that life and raise that little life in your family. How's it going?
It's going great.
Is it? She's doing pretty well, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. 6 years old. Is she learning things? And
she's in kindergarten, and she has a pony, and she goes to gymnastics, and she's daddy's little girl, and just really a loving, wonderful child. And she goes to different speaking things with me and hands out brochures and is very gregarious and friendly. And so it's fun for me because she's outgoing enough that I can have her. She helps me down at my office. She shreds documents because she can't read and waters the plants and has some fun.
Does she know that she was in a snowflake form for a couple of 3-4 years?
You know, we've talked about it, I didn't know how I was going to deal with this. And one day I was laying down on the bed with her saying her prayers at night, and I wasn't exactly sure how I was going to word this. And then here's what she told me. She said, "Mom, I was in heaven with Jesus, and he told me that he was sending me to Maria and Jeff, and that I was just the right one, and that I was special just for them."
Wow.
And I thought, I'm going with that. We just keep affirming how special she is and about how God sent her to us. And she hears me talking to people about, you know, she's a snowflake baby, she was adopted as a frozen embryo, but I had a hard time explaining this to my pediatrician, let alone to my 6-year-old. So the biology of it, you know, that's a concept that is beyond her. Right now she knows she's special. Right now she was adopted as a frozen embryo, but she isn't cognitively able to really comprehend what that means.
In some ways, this is certainly a testimony to the robustness of human life and how God has enabled that little child to be preserved over 3-4 years for a long period of time. Even I read at some point up to 10, 11, 12 years, these little ones can be preserved. And that's a testimony to how God has constructed human life. He doesn't want it to pass away. You know, he wants it to be preserved.
Well, what's amazing, there's a kid in Bellevue named Asa, and his parents, they've done some radio stuff, so I'm not saying their name out of context. So they have a boy that was in the freezer for 13 years.
Wow.
And his name was Asa McClure. And we went actually to the White House, and when George Bush vetoed embryonic stem cell research, and we both had our children there as examples of why we shouldn't be doing embryonic stem cell research. They can be adopted.
Wow, 13 years. It's just incredible. And now they're walking around. And they're persons, and I think they're people are going to eventually have to admit that these little guys were persons at the point at which they were in that test tube or in that cryogenic laboratory. They just got to admit that. Where are you in terms of the personhood amendments and things that are being attempted around the United States?
Well, I think that we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
And there's lots of different states that are working on it, and every state has different language, and people sometimes argue about the language and those kinds of things. But I think that the point is that people are getting it, that life does begin at conception, and that is the truth. We really knew that in ninth grade biology, and
right.
We have just basically altered the truth because it was an inconvenient truth, and you know, in order to rationalize abortion, that's kind of where you have to go, that it's just a blob.
Yeah.
And so I think that the personhood movement is bringing awareness to people where they can come back and say, you know what, that was true, it always was true, and we just need to basically live like it's true.
Mm. And may God help us to consider this life to be precious. And if we consider the life in the test tube precious, if we consider the life in the womb precious, then I think we're going to do a little better with considering the little ones that are walking beside us and living with us as truly precious. And that, I think, is what God wants.
Right.
Well, Maria, thanks so much for joining us on Generations. For more information, where can folks go for more information concerning embryonic adoptions?
We have an organization called Embryo Adoption Services of Cedar Park, and it's a national organization. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me, they can go on to www.adoptanembryo.net. That's adoptanembryo.net.
Okay, that's an adopt. Embryo.net. Again, Maria, thanks for joining us on Generations. We appreciate you.
You're welcome.
And we'll be back in just a moment. Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com. That's ameprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio Program is a ministry of generations with vision, where we work hard to cast a vision for the next generation through each and every radio broadcast. Tune in online at generationsradio.org for the daily show, the blog, and the online store. That's generationsradio.org. Generations Radio broadcast today, talking about personhood. A person's a person no matter how small. That's Dr. Seuss, but you know, I think you go into God's Word, you're going to find that if God agrees with that perspective, and that started with Him. And now I'm going to join Leslie Hanks. She's from Right to Life, and I've known Leslie for a long, long time. Leslie, welcome to the Generations Radio broadcast.
Well, hi, Kevin. What a pleasure to be with you today. Yeah, we do go way back to when we were candidates with the Well, the Constitution Party.
1994.
Wow.
1994. I ran for governor, and you were running for something. I can't remember what it was. But
I was lieutenant governor.
Okay. Well, one of those,
no,
yeah.
No, you ran for Senate, and I ran for lieutenant
that
governor.
That was it. Okay. Right.
And
that was in 1998. So, and before that, I've been associated with Colorado Right to Life down at the Capitol a number of times. And you folks have really been supporting the pro-life cause here in Colorado and holding up that banner for so many years. You know, Leslie, we're just not going to give up, are we?
Oh, never. We can't.
I mean, this is just too important of a subject, and it's basic to everything. I mean, how in the world can you fight for any other right if you don't have the right to life?
Well, that's for sure. And, you know, this is really the greatest human rights struggle of our generation.
Yes.
You know, Hitler's Holocaust was ended by Christians, and slavery was ended by Christians primarily, and we have the same responsibility and duty to end the unjust taking of innocent human life, which happens 4,000 times a day.
I know. 50 million of these babies, and that's a lot. When you look at the population being 300 million, I mean, you know, that's a huge percentage. And yet the other side is not going to give up easily. They're going to continue to fight, and we've got to continue to stay in the battle here.
You know, it really does seem like the old Bible story of David versus Goliath. They get so much favor in the press. They get all kinds of taxpayer funding, which is outrageous. And then they get the donations of all the people that just have evil in their hearts for the innocent. And so we struggle along on the donations of little grandmas, and, you know, people will send us a $5 bill and say, I'm on Social Security, but please take this for the babies. It's just so precious. But it's always a financial struggle to keep nonprofits going. And but it's a real honor to be involved with Colorado Right to Life, as I have been since 1997.
Wow. Well, kudos to you and all the folks at Colorado Right to Life. And but let's talk about the Personhood Amendment, because we tried that first time in 2008.
We did.
And we gathered enough signatures, some, I don't know, 60, 70,000. Christy Burton, a neat little homeschool graduate, was behind that thing. We didn't win it this time, but that's okay. We don't win things right away. We just dig in and we work for the long haul. And you're back again now with another Personhood Amendment.
That's right. And, you know, the thing that's so interesting about how it went last time, the media pundits and all of our opponents, of course, just had a heyday with the sound trumping that we probably, you know, received, they said. And yet, if you look at the statistics, you know, we'd always thought that it was only 10% of the population on either end that was purist, and only 10% would probably want to outlaw all abortion. And yet we got almost 30% of the vote last time. We got over 500,000 votes, in fact, into the 600,000 figures. And since that so-called trouncing at the polls, we have now seen personhood gone to 30 other states. So it is just taking off like it's just so encouraging.
And here's the other thing. You got way more votes than I did when I ran for governor in 1994. So you're doing better than I did. That's worth something. And I was the only pro-life candidate running against Bruce Benson and Roy Romer. And they were both hardcore pro-aborts. They wanted to get government to pay for abortions. And here, little David was trying to throw a few rocks.
Oh, that was so neat that you did that. And, yeah, every opportunity you have to expose the Republicans that are phony baloney on, you know, so-called conservatism, it's always worth something.
Yeah, it is. But so the point being that we're making progress. We're making progress. We're almost 30% of the vote on that one. And so now you're coming at it one more time with slightly different wording.
Slightly different wording, yes. Based upon some input that we got last time, from a Dr. Diane Irving. She's a PhD and she teaches at Georgetown University. And she was concerned that our language last time didn't go quite far enough, that we had been leaving out children conceived by asexual reproduction. So based on her suggestions, we went ahead and our petition language this time says, person defined as used in sections 3.6 and 25 of Article 2, in the state constitution, the term person shall apply to every human being from the beginning of the biological development of that human being. So it's still, you know, it has the concept of conception and fertilization, but I don't know if you're aware of this, Kevin, and your listeners may not be either, but the term conception and fertilization have really been redefined. It was back in the 60s, I think, that the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology redefined it to mean implantation, so they could market and produce and sell and seduce women into taking birth control pills.
Right. In many cases in which those little ones already conceived were killed by those forms of birth control.
That's right. That's right.
And so many, I think, sometimes Christian folk and well-meaning folk wound up losing their little ones, and they didn't even know it.
That's right.
So now you're saying biological development, and what that means, now let's be real clear on what this means. That means when two cells come together, that's development. Because we've got development now. Those two cells are together. They're ready to multiply into 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. Who do you appreciate? that's called development, right? I mean, that's something happening biologically.
Right. And I mean, sperm meets egg. I mean, we know something magical and majestic and infinitely valuable takes place in that miraculous moment. So, you know, I'm just glad that she gave us her input as a expert in this arena, and so that we really do have language now that she feels like we'll meet muster. And so we are just thrilled at the growth in the personhood movement around the country because, you know, Kevin, we really have been kind of, as a friend of ours had made a wonderful DVD called 40 Years in the Wilderness, we kind of were just floundering for so long. I mean, people would come up with a new way to regulate child killing. Oh, if you wait so many hours, you know, then you can kill the baby. Or if you ask for a signature on the dotted line, then you can kill the baby. And so people couldn't, it was hard to get people inspired to do that regulation legislative effort. And so this, everybody gets it. They say, wow, you know, we are talking about, even Harry Blackmun said in the, you know, he was considered the architect of Roe. And, of course, he was a Supreme Court justice at the time that Roe was handed down. And he even said in their hearings that the personhood of the fetus could be established, then the case for Roe collapses. So, I mean, why did we miss that for all these years? That is kind of the thing that has me scratching my head. But whatever, we've got that as a silver bullet to pursue at this point. Although there are still people out there that claim that personhood isn't the way to go. But I think it's always the right time to do the right thing. And so we are proceeding.
It's hard to argue with language that is clear, concise, and fundamental. That is, you're just getting down to brass tacks, and you're just saying what needs to be said. And if pro-lifers can learn to be fundamental and clear in their language, then I think in the end they'll win the game. You don't win the game by continual compromise. You win the game when you're clear and concise on your principles, and you state them well, and you hopefully codify those into law.
Well, and you know, one other thing that your listeners might find interesting is when we launched in July, we had a press conference at the Capitol, and our co-sponsor, Gualberto Jones-Garcia, was a dad of a brand-new baby boy, and he was probably, and I just said his name wrong, it's Garcia Jones, pardon me, Guabe Garcia Jones. He is a law school graduate himself, and he had just had a baby boy, and he was holding him during our press conference, and he made the astonishing statement that the little guy was about 7 days old, and he said, 10 days ago, this little baby would have had less rights, fewer rights than a dog or a cat in Colorado, and that is the sad to say truth.
Hmm. Wow. Well, you need to collect signatures in order to get this thing on the ballot, so why don't we talk brass tacks here? What needs to happen here?
We are collecting signatures as we speak. In fact, we have till the middle of February, and we need to collect 76,047 valid signatures. But in order to get that, because they do go over every single signature, and there will be some people that sign not knowing that they may not still be residing at the address where they were registered, or, you know, they signed and didn't care that they weren't registered. So you have to go way over. We'll probably try to gather, you know, at least 100,000 plus. And I know last time we got twice as many as we needed, and that was just such a blessing. And, you know, it's such an honor to be following in the footsteps of Christy Burton. She just got people excited, and she just got married about a month ago. So she is, you know, enjoying being a newlywed, but I think she's going to be helping us somewhat, and we're thrilled about that. And
well, I signed this petition last Sunday, so my name is officially on the personhood amendment, as well as a number of other folks from our own little church in Castle Rock. But we need to get people to carry these petitions. So how do they pick up these petitions? What website? What's the contact info?
Well, if they do go go to personhoodcolorado, that is a great place to go, .com. It shows all the distribution sites, but you could also have anybody that would like a petition. Colorado Right to Life office manager Donna is happy to fulfill any orders. Just call up and say, please send me a petition, send me 5 petitions. My church is really into this. We are thrilled to send anybody however many they need. And each petition has spaces for 96 signatures. And, of course, you don't want to sign your own, but we're, you know, encouraging people to get out to Christian events. Like this weekend is a Joyce Meyer Christian Women's Ministry event down at the Pepsi Center, and we'll have people down there, you know, asking people to sign. And some people will be going to, the grocery stores and football games and, any venue where you've got people and you carry your clipboard and have a little sign on the back that says pro-life petition. It's kind of fun. You see people say, hey, I care about kids, and they're eager to give you a signature, and it usually takes about 2 minutes.
Again, folks, for more information on the Personhood Amendment, you want to call Colorado Right to Life at 303-753-9395. That's 303-753-9395, or just go to personhoodcolorado.com on the web. And you have been listening to the Generations Radio Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. You can interact with the program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world, at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.